Let me take up the four last things of Christian eschatology: death, judgment, heaven, hell. You have commented, at least obliquely, on all but one, heaven. Why have you given heaven such short shrift?
Because I don't believe in it.
Without a vision of heaven, your belief system is unlikely to draw many adherents.
I'm not trying to found a religion. I think if these ideas of mine have any value, a great deal of time will go by before there are any adherents. First of all, however, I believe that our childlike notion of heaven has to be relinquished.
But not hell.
I don't believe in absolute hell any more than I believe in heaven. Certainly not in hell as a place of eternal punishment. It strikes me as prodigiously wasteful.
You set the play you made out of your novel, The Deer Park, in hell. Hell is something you refer to all the time. It's a constant reference. But heaven is absent.
It was perfectly legitimate, I felt, to put my characters in hell because hell is a point of reference for everyone. Everyone believes in hell, and much more readily than we do in heaven. Heaven is harder to conceive of. What we all know is that the most perfect moments in our lives don't last for long. Extraordinary moments are perishable. Whereas we can be in hell for months, even years. We can live in towering depression. Hell, therefore, is much more available to human beings as a set of stages. It was easy for me to situate the play of The Deer Park in hell. It gave a foundation to the drama. Yet I still don't believe in hell as eternal punishment. Rather, hell has dimensions. Some parts of it are critically worse than others. We can approach that when we talk about reincarnation. My notion remains that the only heaven and hell we ever receive, the only judgment that comes to us, is by way of reincarnation. To wit, as a reward, we can be given a better possibility in our next life, or we can be born into a worse one, if that is what we deserve. In other words, I'm not interested in absolute moral judgments, eternal heaven, eternal hell. To the contrary, just think of what it means to be a good man or a bad one. What, after all, is the measure of difference? The good guy may be 65% good and 35% bad. That's a very good guy. The average decent fellow might be 54% good, 46% bad, and the average mean spirit is the reverse. So say I'm 60% bad and 40% good. For that, must I suffer eternal punishment? The argument I would advance is that heaven and hell make no sense if the majority of humans are a complex mixture of good and evil. There's no reason to receive a reward if you're 57-43. Why sit around forever in an elevated version of Club Med? That's almost impossible to contemplate. You remember the fun George Bernard Shaw had with his expectation of heaven as a prodigiously boring place where Don Juan nonetheless wished to reside because at least you could think there? That was the best Shaw could come up with as a concept for heaven. At least you can think well and carefully. Now, there are Catholic theologians, including my good friend Eugene Kennedy, who write of the upper reaches of heaven where the best of humans refine their souls as they come to comprehend more and more the majesty and exceptional subtlety of the Godhead. It is beautifully stated, but to my critical spirit does not answer one fundamental question, to wit, what is the end of such illumination? Its sole purpose still seems to offer no more than a further understanding of the love of God and the great importance that we love Him more and more. There is no suggestion that the Lord might have greater needs than His or her own glorification. The point to all my suppositions is that God still has an unfulfilled vision and wishes to do more.